Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
And today is Juneteenth that commemorates the ending of slavery in the United States. And especially this year, this day has got huge meaning after the death of George Floyd and so many others. Nationwide protests demanding an end to police brutality, demanding racial justice, demanding criminal justice reform. Today is Juneteenth, and we will be mindful of that all day long. And John, the Lakers did something very cool today.
Well, the Lakers have been pretty consistent with ever since the death of George Floyd into being proactive with what they do.
Yes.
We talked yesterday about how they hired somebody specifically to a new title that will examine how you can explore diversity.
Yeah.
and make it different. But
yeah, the
on
Lakers
top of
have
that,
hired, I want to mention Dr. Karita Brown, an assistant professor of African American Studies and Sociology at UCLA, is their inaugural director of racial equity and action.
They not only did that, they gave everybody who works for the Lakers got the day off, a paid holiday today. Did you see what Jeannie Buss tweeted?
I am just astounded by this.
Are you?
I really am. I'm really astounded.
Yeah,
by this. I can't believe this exists.
Ask
in year of our Lord 2020.
Not only am I not astounded by it, ask any of your black friends if they are, and they'll tell you they're not. First of all, explain what it is.
Okay, so Jeannie Buss received a letter. And it's a shocking letter that much of it can't even be read on the show. It addresses her with a misogynistic term. And Jeannie said, after much thought, I decided to share this letter I received on Monday so that everybody can see the hate that is real and is living out there. This is happening in our world today. It really exists. And it basically says this: after 60 years as a huge Lakers fan, I now say to hell with the overpaid N-word traders and the NBA with the N-word scribbled out with a black marking. Go to hell and join blank Kobe Bryant, it concludes. And Jeannie says that this guy actually had a return address on his letter. And Jeannie responded to Joe on Instagram. Did sending this letter make you feel better? Really, all you did was waste your time and energy and your postage stamp, but thank you for including your return home address. Why don't you look in the mirror and see your ugliness? Because I refuse to. I have received letters like this over the years. The advice I always got, ignore it, but not anymore. On this day, Juneteenth, I ask my white friends to join together, acknowledge the racism that exists in our country and around the world, and pledge to stop ignoring it. We all must do better. She concluded with hashtag Juneteenth and hashtag hate won't win.
First of all, I'm glad Jeannie sent it because it surprises me that you are astounded, because I think that black people go through stuff like this every single day. And I think the fact that she was proactive and sent this out there will open the eyes of people who don't get that yet. And you just admitted that you're astounded, that you're surprised somebody could write that letter.
Yeah, I mean, astounded.
Astounded
to see it in writing.
Yeah, I think that this is the type of thing that's gone unchecked for a really long time, and those days hopefully are over. Stuff like this is just not going to be tolerated anymore. And I think that by being proactive and sending it out, it helps. I think that people now are going to, I've heard other people react like you did to say, saying, I can't believe in 2020 that somebody would send a letter like this. Of course, this type of hate's out there. Of course, that's what these people have been trying to tell us, that this hate's out there and it needs to be confronted.
Yeah. Well,
and I'm glad that she put it out.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got a long way to go before we change. This sort of magic wand mentality that all of a sudden, because of the last few weeks, everything has changed, everything is is new for people of color is ridiculous. We've got an absolutely long way to go. There was an African-American man shot in the back by a police officer
in the
just
back.
This last weekend. In the back. So we've got a long way to go when it comes to issues of police brutality and issues of racial equality. But I do think that do you remember at all conversation about Juneteenth a year ago?
Only because I worked in TV news for a lot of years, we used to debate how much to cover Juneteenth. In other words, it would always get a story or two in the rundown.
Right.
But it wouldn't be the lead. It wouldn't be. It's the same thing with Kwanzaa.
Sure.
We would have a lot of debates over how many Kwanzaa stories should we do on the news. And what I like is now that those conversations have moved to the front burner. It's not like you would never say we're not going to mention Juneteenth at all. I don't know, even know if we could do it, but I would imagine.
Well, no, I mean, if you look at ESPN, I mean, look at the way we just came into our show. Look at ESPN. I've been watching the network all day long. The number of stories, the number of African Americans who've talked about their experience in relation to Juneteenth is incredible. I mean, I think there is a huge turning point, a huge inflection point that we're going through right now, and I think a lot of white folks, like John and I are white folks, are becoming aware at a greater level, at a deeper level, of what a day like this means to African American people.
Yeah, to answer your original question, I wonder if you went back. I don't know if June 19th was on a weekday last year, but I wonder if you went back and pulled our show, if we even brought it up.
Yeah, I don't know that we did. I don't know that we did. Yeah, so there's an awakening, I think, happening right now. There's a huge awakening, and it's not just it's white people are awakening to the issues in a greater way, in a more tangible way, in a more powerful way. The issues that relate to racial justice in America. And by the way, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Ryan Clark, who works for ESPN with us here. His son had an experience last week, and he talked about it this morning on Get Up. We'll explain it to you when he comes on here at 3:30 today, otherwise known as the bottom of the hour. It's a really, really powerful story. He's very emotional about it, so I'm looking forward to getting him on the air.
And his son plays college football at Arizona State for Herm Edwards.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll talk to Ryan at 3:30. But you know, it's funny when you were telling that story and you said that you were astounded that this exists in 2020. I remembered an SNL skit.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Chappelle hosted SNL.
Right.
And they have a brilliant way of satirizing things that is really funny, but at the same time that kind of makes you face the truth. And they basically, when Chappelle was hosting, he was at a party and Chris Redd was there with him. Or no, I actually think they brought back Chris Rock. Chris Rock came back.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah, this was just this last year.
With Chappelle.
Yeah.
And basically they were sitting around watching election results with all their friends who are all Hillary supporters. And they were all getting ready to throw the giant party Hillary's going to be president. And the results started coming in, and all the white people were saying, wait, we lost Wisconsin? And Chappelle and Chris Rock would look at each other and go, you're surprised you lost Wisconsin, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you know, there's an underlying racism that exists in this country that for whatever reason, we've all been afraid to talk about or afraid to bring to the front burner. And I think one thing that has happened since the death of George Floyd is that people are just tired of not bringing it up now.
Right.
They're just going to put it like that letter with Jeannie. I doubt somebody is going to send her another letter like that today. because especially one with a return address.
Yeah, really.
Because they know where it's going.
Well, and I mean, let's be real about some. I mean, there are statues coming down all across the country. There was one in Minneapolis. There was one outside the Redskins Stadium, which is somewhat ironic given the fact that it's called the Redskins Stadium.
Yeah.
The commissioner of the Southeast Conference announced yesterday that the league will bar Mississippi from holding championship events if the state does not remove the Confederate battle emblem from the state flag. The NCAA issues a statement of its own today saying it's expanding that flag policy, which effectively prohibits Mississippi from hosting NCAA championship events until the flag is changed. The state's Republican governor, Tate Reeves, has said he does not support legislative action to change the state flag and that it should again. He wants it to be put to voters in the state. It amazes me the lack of courage in some leaders. I don't know anybody at this moment who would say, outside the state of Mississippi, who would say, damn right, we want our flag. You know, it is the Confederate flag embedded in their state flag. That racism, when we literally talk about the fact that racism is embedded in our culture, there is the Confederate flag embedded in the Mississippi state flag, and the governor doesn't have the courage to step up and do something about it.
Well, these issues become political, too. There are many, many people who don't who want to say that history is history and it's our history and we should just face up to it. For example,
yeah, but I thought we were changing. I mean, all these statues are coming down all over the place. I thought we were changing. What's wrong with Mississippi?
Well, let me ask you this. So remember there was that guy, was it John Calhoun, who had his name on the college at Clemson and they found out that he was pro-slavery, and DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson, among others, encouraged Clemson to change the name of the because this guy, he was vice president for John Quincy Adams,
yes.
This guy Calhoun. So they applied enough pressure and Clemson changed it. So now it's like the Clemson Honors College. So if we follow your logic that you want to change the Mississippi flag, and I actually think it'll eventually end up getting changed, but where do you stop? Do you take down the Jefferson Monument?
Let's be clear about John Calhoun. His beliefs, his writings, his warnings influenced the South's secession from the Union. He was one of the leaders of the Confederacy. So, yes, one of the leaders of the Confederacy, I support his name coming off a building at Clemson University.
But I'm pretty sure the only presidents who didn't have slaves before Lincoln were Lincoln and John Adams. I think all the other ones had slaves. Do you take down their monuments?
You know, it's a fair question. I think each one of these situations is on a case by case basis. Like you originally brought up the Calhoun thing at South Carolina, and it wasn't until I read a little bit about Calhoun that he was one of the leading secessionists amongst people who were in favor of a Confederacy that I said, okay, yeah, no, that makes sense on a case by case basis. Absolutely, leader of the Confederacy, absolutely should come down. Mississippi flag absolutely should change. It is, their flag is literally the Confederate flag.
I think that eventually that flag will change. I don't know if this particular governor is trying to play to his base, but I think eventually that flag will change. The harder things are, like what we talked about on the show last year. Remember that interview with John Wayne came out where he had some clearly racist viewpoints, said some
yes.
really things that would... Do you take his name off the airport in Orange County? I mean, that's a debate. You can have that debate.
Had some very, very backwards views. Had some backwards views on race. Had some backwards views of LGBTQ people. Had backward views. Is that enough to change the name of the airport? By the way, where does that stand? Did they change it? Did
nope.
they not change it?
Didn't change it.
They're leaving it the same.
Yep, still John Wayne Airport. Now, it depends. You mentioned Calhoun, and you made a distinction between just being a slave owner and being like a leader of the slavery movement. At what point, though, like, read up on Thomas Jefferson. He's a very highly revered founder of the country and former president. And there's a Jefferson monument there, and he had slaves. So it becomes an issue of how far do you want to take it. So I think these things are not
we can all agree Confederate flag shouldn't be flown. NASCAR got rid of it. Statues all across the country that have honored Confederate leaders have been taken down. Confederate flag should not be flying.
Who is the band that literally changed their name? Lady Antebellum.
Lady Antebellum changed their
name to Lady A because they didn't want to honor one of the, was Antebellum a city or a name of a general? I'm trying to remember. I took Civil War history and I should know better. But they're not gonna go by that anymore.
No, they aren't. And what's ironic about that, I don't know if you heard this or not, there was already a performer, an African-American woman who is a vocalist who works under the name Lady A, so they're going to have to change their name
again
from Lady A. Yeah. All this stuff is very sticky, and it's got to be handled on a case-by-case basis.
According to the dictionary, antebellum is occurring or existing before a war, especially the Civil War. For example, the conventions of the antebellum South. So it was a way to describe life in the South back then. So
okay,
that's why
it.
They want to get rid of it.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, it's all incredibly sticky, and I think you have to take it each on a case-by-case basis. But when I see the Confederate flag, I just think backwards. I just think backwards views. In the same way that those statues have come down all across the country. In the same way, NASCAR has eliminated the Confederate flag. Mississippi needs to check the calendar and make a change to their state flag.
All right, by the way, update on the story you mentioned. Lady Antebellum will keep its new name, Lady A, after connecting with blues singer Anita White, who had been using the same name for more than 20 years. Both parties are going to continue to use the same name.
Okay, good. Whew, that's a relief.
Now, okay, this is one story, the Juneteenth story, that's obviously top of mind today.
Yes.
The coronavirus story is now taking a really weird turn, especially at my alma mater, UCLA.
Yeah.
We'll get into that next.
Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. The latest on our Tinder profiles.
You guys both have quite a few swipes.
Do we?
I spent like 10 minutes just swiping everything. But Mace, I would say that Brittany definitely has way more messages.
Nice.
Lindsay, anybody putting it out there? Like, anybody want to directly hook up with Brittany tonight?
Yeah.
No.
We can go through them.
You want to do it later? We'll do this UCLA thing because we got Ryan Clark coming up. So, Mace, last night in Westwood, 30 UCLA football players had a virtual team meeting and then signed a document that they believe will protect them in their upcoming return to campus amid the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm getting
which
this
is
from the,
Monday, right? They're coming back on Monday.
I'm getting this from the LA Times. And basically, according to the Times, the document asserts that the players do not trust Coach Chip Kelly to act in their best interests, particularly in regard to their health, a realm where UCLA has perpetually failed us. According to the document, they've neglected and mismanaged injury cases.
Damn.
They do not provide examples. Every day, Mace, every day we have a story about college football and COVID that isn't good. Lindsay, what did you say that how many people tested positive for corona at Clemson?
28 is what Bruce Feldman is reporting.
All right.
28 at Clemson. We know five at the Phillies training facility in Clearwater, along with three staff. We know
13
one,
yesterday at Texas.
We know one with the Toronto Blue Jays. They've shut down. That was he was exhibiting symptoms. They've shut down their training camp. So, I mean, this is all really tough. The part of this that jumps out at me, though, John, is they don't trust Chip Kelly.
And, you know, this, let's be candidly here. This is not good on several levels, but Kelly doesn't have the support that you would normally have because he doesn't win.
Right.
He hasn't won at UCLA. So it's not like we're talking about Dabo Swinney or Nick Saban here. People are seriously questioning whether or not Chip Kelly's heart is in it. And now the players are wondering if he cares about him at all. We play that game. Is this a big deal, little deal, no deal? To me, this is a big deal.
This is
what
a big deal.
Think?
This is a big deal. I mean, if they had said in this statement, and again, it's 30 current players presented this document. If they had said, hey, you know, we're concerned about COVID, and we want to make sure that all of our safety protocols are good, and that would be one thing. But this is... Do not trust Chip Kelly to act in their best interest. The program has perpetually failed us, neglected and mismanaged injury cases. These are real serious allegations from a group of 30 UCLA football players.
And in case you're wondering if these are just disgruntled guys who don't play, starting quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson is on the list.
Yep.
And signed the document. Some players, according to this article, express willingness to boycott practices and games in order to make a bigger point. But that went too far for most in the group, according to two UCLA players who signed the document but asked the Times for anonymity because of fear of retribution.
Players are demanding, and I good for them. Good for them to make a demand. They want a third-party health official to be on hand for all football activities to make sure that protocols for COVID-19 prevention are being followed. They want there to be anonymous whistleblower protections provided for athletes and staff to report violations. In other words, hey, I just saw coach do this. I'm going to call this phone number and report what's happening. And the third one is every player, they want every player who's on this letter to continue without fear of losing their scholarship or any other retaliation.
Yesterday we were talking about what would need to happen in order for the whole sport to shut down. So here's what one UCLA player told the Times. What people don't understand is they say there's a 0.1% chance of somebody dying. But the last time I checked, that 0.1% has to be somebody. We're going to come to the point where a college player will literally have to die from COVID-19 for someone to understand what's going on. I hope it doesn't reach that point. And it is kind of strange that the kids are the ones teaching the adults in this case. They're looking at Chip Kelly saying, look, man, you're not putting on a helmet and going out there.
Right, right.
It's us.
Well, I mean, it goes back to that Christine Brennan quote from USA Today yesterday, where she said, how many hospitalizations and deaths of players, coaches, staff, administrators, referees, and fans will we accept to have our beloved college and pro football back this season? It is a question. I mean, you can mitigate risk all you want, but the odds are somebody's going to get sick, and God help us if somebody actually does die from COVID. And it's not necessarily just players. It's coaches, it's assistant coaches, it's older folks who are around a program, training guys, all that kind of stuff. God help us if somebody does die of COVID, because it will, I think everything will come to a screeching halt, don't you?
Yeah, and to back up your point, here's what another player told the Times. With the pandemic, we haven't seen anything like this in 100 years. So now's not the time to simply shut up and play football. Sports will always be there. These institutions will always be there. The pandemic has not destroyed any building. The pandemic is destroying humanity. So it's bigger than sports. Mace, I think we got to get our heads around the idea that we might not have any football. Every day we have a story about COVID-19 and how it's getting worse. Every single day. And football is the one sport that has said the whole time, bubble, we don't need a stinking bubble. We don't need, we're bringing in fans. We don't need stadiums with no fans. We're going. We're going for it. And now the players are fighting back. And if, and I'll tell you another thing. You know, we've been talking for the better part of a year that USC is probably going to have a new coach next year. Now I'm not so sure if UCLA won't too.
Let's not bury Clay Helton yet.
Do you think Clay Helton's a coach at USC next year?
Well, I mean, I think he's got a chance to prove himself this year.
Yeah, Keyshawn doesn't.
Yeah, that's all right. If they go 10-2, I think Keyshawn will change his mind.
You think they're going 10-2?
I think it's possible.
Yeah, look at the schedule.
Yeah, look. I mean, look at their quarterback. I mean, when they released the AP polls this year, I think SC is going to come in top 10 or just outside the top 10.
Well, and by the way, what I said, look at the schedule. Let's say they had 12 games on the schedule. How many of those are we actually going to see, if any? I mean, there's
so
many
variables. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the question. All right, coming up next for you, Ryan Clark. Powerful story about his son. He told it this morning on Get Up, and we want you to hear it next. Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN. So every morning, John and I watch what we call the Get Up. It is the way I start my day every day, and one of the regular.
Oh God, be honest! I watch it live when it comes on.
I watch it on DVR,
and yes, and you watch it when you get up.
Still
at 10 a.m.
Still, the first thing I watch in the day.
I am representing Ryan and Mike Greenberg and Laura Rutledge and the whole gang when they come on at 5 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast. And Ryan Clark is nice enough to join us now. Ryan, how you holding up, man?
I'm doing well, man. You know, just finished a cool day of work on ESPN from the house, so you can't really beat that. And, you know, now I'm just going to talk to you guys for a little bit. Then relax.
Cool, man.
For the rest of the night.
So your son, Jordan, was involved in an incident in Tempe. Can you lay out exactly what happened for our listeners?
Yeah, he... they had to report back to school. He plays ball there, so they reported back to school to start work. And so I didn't had to ship his car, so he didn't have a vehicle. So he and his friends were hungry. They walked to Whataburger kind of late at night, and they said because of COVID restrictions, you couldn't come inside. One of the guys that was employed there was like, hey, man, just ask people in the drive-thru and maybe somebody will get it for you. To ask a young lady or to ask a woman. She said she didn't have the time. She drove up. A guy behind her agreed to do it. When she gets there, when she gets to the window, she rolls down the window. They're waiting on the wall for the guy to buy their food, and she asks them what's their problem. They say they're just waiting on food. So then she tells the manager inside that she was being harassed, so he gives her free food. She rolls the window down. She says, thanks for the free food, in words. Then as she's driving off, she says bye and then repeats the racial slur again. My son kind of, you know, had an opportunity to type something up. He understands the place we are in as a society, but to me, he didn't necessarily understand the perception of black men to some people. And I think this was really an education in that.
Ryan, you talked a lot on Get Up this morning about how your father, who's still alive and who talked to both you and Jordan since this has happened, had gone through something similar, and he was shaking his head that here we are some 45 years later and similar things are still going on. I know that you're disgusted that it happened, but are you surprised that this is still going on?
No, not at all. Not one single bit. I think that was more my frustration with Jordan. And I can be honest, in parenting, we don't always get it right. And maybe this time I didn't. Once I knew he was okay, obviously. I knew he wasn't harmed, that he hadn't been injured in any way. And so I immediately went into the mode of teach. I immediately went into the mode of parenting. I can be 100%, which I probably didn't ask him, was he okay, till 20 minutes after the first time we talked. I texted him and called him back and said, my bad, man, how are you doing? Just because I was so upset he put himself in that situation. But then that came to me. And I know parents do this a lot, but I was like, I should have taught him better before he left this house, because he had been home because of COVID. Before he's left this house, I should have talked to him about the climate that we're in. I should have told him that because there are people now that are listening, because there are more white people, more Latinos, more Asians who have joined the fight for social justice and equality for all, that true racists, true people, people with true evil and hate in their heart, they are now going to double down on that hate. They're going to double down on that prejudice, on that racism, on that discrimination. And so you have to be careful. Obviously, his whole life, he's been my son. Now he's a former high school All-American who's at Arizona State, who's great in school, who's Christian, who does all these things. So that's who he sees when he looks in the mirror. He doesn't understand that he doesn't get to walk around with a sweatshirt that lists all of his characteristics, personality traits, and accolades. The only thing he gets to walk around that you see is his brown skin. And to some people, that is threatening. To some people, that is wrong. To some people, he doesn't deserve the same rights, liberties, and justices that they do. And this was a woman who was very much like that. This was a manager at Whataburger who was very much like that. And so he has to protect himself from those people, because if something happens, if the cops are called and he's harmed, if this lady decides to sell a story that she had to pull out a gun and protect herself from these three black men who were walking toward her car, I don't believe justice is served. And if justice is served, that justice would never be enough for me to get my child back. And I don't think he fully understood that, but I believe this incident is a blessing in that way, because now he does. The trick is not allowing him to be cynical, not allowing him to be hateful, not allowing him to look at all white people the same way because some white people look at him like that young lady did, or that woman did.
Yeah. His safety, obviously, you know, is incredibly important to you as a dad. And Ryan, I'm curious on a kind of a separate note. Your son plays football at Arizona State. We got a report that a whole bunch of kids down at Clemson tested positive for COVID today. How concerned are you about your son and college football in general?
I'm obviously extremely concerned about my son. Growing up and being in this house is a little different. I don't have a spleen, a gallbladder, a piece of my liver just because of an injury in Denver when I played. And so we have all been on a lot of restriction. We have all been educated on how we can at least protect ourselves and our loved ones as much as possible. My mother also tested positive early in February. So we've been really on it. But I talked to a couple of coaches there, and one of the coaches told me very candidly, he said, look, I told our kids, you have to essentially give up a year of life away from the football field. So that's parties, that's clubbing, that's girls, that's any of these things that could put you in harm's way if you want this season to happen. And I think that's where they are for this 6-week period or block that the NCAA is giving many of these schools. It's like, okay, let's see if you can put something in place that keeps your team from having high COVID positive testing, and now you can have a season. And if they don't have that, I think if they don't, not a consistent piece of time without having these tests, without having 13 guys at Texas, without having so many guys at Clemson, I truly believe that the college football season is in jeopardy.
I agree with you, Ryan. I think it's a real thing, and that it's something we should all watch. We're talking to Ryan Clark, who had a long and successful career as a defensive back in the NFL and now works at ESPN. Ryan, I'm curious about something. You talked about how your son is learning what it's like to be a black man in America, to be a black young man. In this case, he's in Tempe. Herm Edwards, who you know and who is considered one of the great leaders in the NFL today, and is now in his first college experience as a college head coach, is now Jordan's head coach at ASU. Did that have something to do with why he went to Arizona State, the fact that Herm is there and Herm has such a good reputation?
Oh, absolutely. My son, he loves Coach Hearn. He loves Coach L, which obviously I just call him Coach. And that was big to him. And it wasn't even the fact that he had coached in the NFL or he had this pedigree as a defensive back as well as a player. It was who he was as a man. I remember sitting in that office and hearing when Hearn offered Jordan a scholarship. I was obviously extremely happy, but so was he. And he's like, man, like, that's a dude. And it was funny he thought about it this way. He's like, you know what, Dad? If anybody's going to scream at me for the next 4 years, I want it to be him. And that was a 17-year-old's simplistic way of putting it, but he felt that comfortable with Hearn. He felt that comfortable being in a room with him. Also, the new defensive coordinator, co-defense coordinator, Antonio Pierce, is Uncle Antonio to Jordan. I played with him in 2004, oh, wow, 2005 in Washington. He still remains one of my closest friends. And so for Jordan, it was that familiarity. But I think it lended a lot to a situation like this, which obviously you never can expect or plan for. But, you know, they immediately went into meetings. I've gotten calls from not one, not two, not three people on the staff, but multiple people on the staff that says, you know what, we got it, Ryan. We have Jordan. We're going to take care of him. We've had meetings. We've talked about it. And I think that's important, that they are being active in supporting their players through this and educating their players. And also, now that they've had something outside of the norm happen to one of their players, they want to speak about that as well. And I think all those things are important, especially in 2020 for a young black, young American football player.
Ryan, we really appreciate you doing this. We know you've been on the clock all day long, and we really appreciate you making time for us at the end of your day. God bless, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Be blessed.
All right. Thanks. There's Ryan Clark. That's a story, man. That's something that white kids don't got to worry about.
Yeah, you know, kind of ties together the last few seconds we've done. The UCLA guys not trusting Chip Kelly, and then you hear how Jordan, Ryan Clark's son, talks about Herm Edwards.
Yep.
And how Herm, and you heard a parent say, yeah, I trust that Herm's got his back. And I don't know if you can say that about UCLA. I agree with Ryan Mace. I think it's this assumption we're all making that college football, and for that matter, pro football, are a lock to come back, I think is a huge assumption. I think there's a chance we don't see either one of them.
Yeah, I agree. All right, coming up next for you is Birthday of the Day. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Birthday of the Day! And we have some interesting ones today, a couple of really good sports ones, John. Start with this. Macklemore turns 37. Rapper won 4 Grammys in 2014. Best New Artist, Best Rap Album, Best Rap Song, Best Rap Performance.
I look at him as kind of a flash in the pan, though, don't you? Even though he has 4 Grammys. Like, I don't know if Macklemore's around in 10 years. What do you think?
Probably not. I do dig this particular song, Same Love, which is an LGBTQ song. He had an album to go to number 2, Gemini. I remember Marcellus, the day after he won those Grammys, saying it was a load of crap, that Macklemore has no cred. Lindsey Funch, does Macklemore have any cred?
Not really anymore. I think he has to come out with another hit, really, before he gets more cred. And John's right. He's probably on the way out right now.
On the way out. Okay.
Yeah, he hasn't had a hit song in a while. And ever since he broke up with Halsey, he's kind of been irrelevant, right?
Okay. So,
who broke up with who there?
I don't know. I'm guessing she probably broke up with him because she
Halsey can do a lot better than
Yeah, Halsey anymore. Halsey is unbelievable. All right. Dirk Nowitzki is 42, future Hall of Famer, retired after his age 40 season, 6th all-time in points, won a championship in 2010-2011. John, one of the best players of his generation and probably the best foreign-born player in history.
No, he's number 2. But number two is not bad. Who do you think? Funch will know.
Hakeem?
Yep.
Yeah, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Olajuwon's the best foreign-born player ever.
Yeah.
Patrick Ewing was born in Jamaica. I think Dirk is comparable to Ewing, and Dirk won a title. But Olajuwon's the best foreign-born player of all time. I think Dirk's number 2. And Patrick Ewing people look at as American. So, but Dirk is highly underrated and one of the first 7-footers ever to be able to shoot threes. You know, he's Dirk's 7 yep. feet tall and he can shoot threes. So great player.
Did he invent the stretch four?
Invent it? Well, he's the first guy. Do you
kind of?
What? Well, okay. So Larry Bird Funch was 6'10". But he played on a team with Kevin McHale, so by definition, is he a three, Larry Bird?
I think
Bird?
He was considered a three because he had McHale and Parrish up front.
Right.
Yeah, McHale and Parrish, right.
Like, what's Durant? Durant's 6'11". Is he a three?
I think he's a three, yeah.
Yeah, but he's so tall.
It's hard because we're now so right. positionless in the NBA. Yeah,
Fudge, here's the hardest one. What's Giannis? Is he a four?
I don't even know. He's just a basketball player.
Right. So maybe Dirk started that, should get some credit for starting that evolution, the word Mace just used. Dirk kind of turned positionless into a thing. Because you had to guard him out at the three-point line, and you yep. had to guard him in the post. And he had that one-legged follow-away that no one could guard, even if they were all over him. Great player. I don't think he's the birthday of the day, but a great player. Might be second on my list.
All right. Next one is famous for saying this.
For the past 2 weeks, you've been reading about a bad rag. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
That is Lou Gehrig, part of the 1927 Yankees murderer's row, that team, by the way, batted 307, which is crazy. Lou Gehrig, Hall of Famer, diagnosed with ALS in 1939, died in 1941. One of the all-time great, ball players.
He may be the one. Number one, he's known for being the Iron Horse, a guy who was out there yep. every single day. And you mentioned he died of ALS. Mace, I would argue that more people know the phrase Lou Gehrig's disease
oh, sure.
than ALS.
Yeah.
That's, I think he has a legacy that will long outlive all of us.
That's what I was going to say. Like, they named a disease after him. That's how famous he is.
It's not a good thing, but you're right. It's going to lay, you know, that's how people describe ALS. They say it's Lou Gehrig's disease.
All right, Jake DeGrom has won back-to-back Cy Young Awards. He's 32 today, entering his age 32 season. You know what? This is what came to my head when I thought about Jake DeGrom today. So we've been talking about this 16-team playoff system that the Major League Baseball might go to this year if they can ever get their get themselves together. The Mets last year would have been the eight. That means that the Dodgers would have faced Jake DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard in games 1 and 2 of a 3-game series. That's why I hate 3-game series. But DeGrom, best pitcher there is right now in the game. DeGrom is unbelievable.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody I would rather have if I had one game to save the world. Right now, pitch that game. Maybe Strasburg? Maybe Scherzer?
Yeah, maybe Scherzer.
Is that the list? Strasburg, Scherzer, DeGrom?
Are you going to throw out Verlander?
Yeah, I'm going to throw him out because I don't know if those two are cheating.
Yeah.
But those other three, I don't know if anybody else makes the list. Bueller's too young, Kershaw's too old.
By the way, in these 2 years, he's 21-17. He went 10-9 in 2019 when he had .117.
Yeah,
ERA.
I was going to say, look at his ERA and his WHIP. He's playing on bad teams.
And last year, 11-8 and a .243 ERA. They don't hit for him. Last year was not the worst Mets team in the world. They just don't hit for him.
Right. This was the old Felix Hernandez rule that he won the Cy Young Award 1 year when he went 13-12.
Yep.
But everybody knew how good he was.
All right, and the last one, Paula Abdul, 58 years old, Laker girl at the age of 18, ended up choreographing all the Laker girl routines. She did a bunch of Janet Jackson videos, started her own music career. This was her biggest hit straight up. She had 6 number one singles. Were you around when Paula Abdul was around the Laker girls, or does that predate you?
Lisa Estrada, who now, you know, Lisa does so many different things for the Lakers.
Sure, sure.
She now is in charge of the entire new building. But Lisa was a Laker girl when Paula was Laker girl, I think. Lisa's not that old, but I think she was a Laker girl with Paula.
Lisa doesn't like me. Lisa has never liked me.
I think that's untrue.
Lisa Estrada has never liked me.
What are you talking about? Didn't she arrange to have you sing the national anthem at a Sparks game or a G League game?
I've just heard through the grapevine she doesn't like me.
I think you're wrong.
But do you like Paula Abdul, Mace?
I do like Paula Abdul. I especially liked her nuttiness on American Idol when she appeared to.
She tried to be nice, compared to Simon being like the worst guy ever.
And she always seemed to be on something. That's what I thought. I always thought Paula was on something.
She was my favorite growing up. She was the first concert I ever saw, and I remember I used to watch wrestling all the time with my dad, and there was a wrestler named Abdullah the Butcher. And I don't know why my dad said this. She was a jokester, but he would always tell me that Abdullah the Butcher was Paula Abdul's dad. So he called her Paula Abdullah the Butcher.
No,
and I would get so mad. And I'd say, Dad, that's not funny. Don't make fun of her. And he's like, oh, really? That's her name. But she was my favorite. I love her.
I think the answer is Lou Gehrig.
Okay, you vote Lou Gehrig.
I do.
Lindsay?
I'm going to go with Lou Gehrig, too.
Funch?
I'll go Dirk Nowitzki.
And I will go Paula Abdul, because she always seemed to be on something.
That's not fair.
I could have been swayed to pick Paula Abdul, just so you know.
Yeah. So Lou Gehrig is officially the birthday of the day. All right, coming up next, we'll circle back to the big story of the day. Actually, a number of big stories. First of all, a story out of UCLA.
I think Brian Kamenetsky's coming up, Dix, too.
Oh, is he? Okay, good. Well, Brian, well, B-Cam on to talk about this stuff, too. First of all, it's Juneteenth. We'll talk a little bit about that. On top of that, story out of UCLA. Some UCLA football players concerned about their health in Chip Kelly's program as they return on Monday, and also some COVID cases now across Florida and South Carolina. We'll get to all that stuff coming up next for you. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.